I think that's the key. I think often we think of technology as the answer. We're actually, you said it, it's the tool, it's that pathway to get there. And I think that's also true about everything in engineering. We often think of engineering as this thing, but I think it's the solution to get there. And when I speak to school students or when I speak to anyone who doesn't know what an engineer is, I always talk about the why of what we're doing, like why behind what we're doing, because that's a really important thing. And engineering and technology and STEM is just a pathway to get there. It's not the end outcome that we're talking about.
Hi, Smart Community friends. In this episode of the Smart Community podcast, I have such a great conversation with Felicity Fury, an engineer and award-winning entrepreneur who now works with high-performing teams to give leaders the skills they need to ignite new possibilities in business, education, and STEM. Felicity starts by telling us about her background and how she came to be a civil engineer, as well as her passion for leadership, creativity, business engineering, and women in STEM, and how these led her into the education space. Felicity then shares with us what a smart community is to her, and we discuss how important creativity and diverse skill sets are in the engineering industry. She then tells us about her three businesses, Power of Engineering, Maths in Real Life, and We Aspire, and the amazing work they are doing with students and future leaders to inspire through education. Before we discuss how STEM fits into the smart community space, we then discuss the link between engineering and leadership and the importance of good communication in engineering to effectively communicate ideas to the people we want to sell them to. We finish our chat discussing the emerging trends of more complex problems communities are now facing, how the community is now involved in the solutions and decision-making processes, as well as the need to be able to solve these problems ahead of time. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Felicity. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I am very good, actually, for a Friday afternoon. And I'm really excited to have this conversation with you. So let's just jump straight in. And can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
Sure. So my background is civil engineering. I'd never heard about engineering growing up. I never thought I would go become a civil engineer, but my physics teacher in school inspired me. I thought I'd actually go be an artist. And here we are. I'm an engineer. I got passionate about business when I wanted to go make a change in engineering. I wanted to get more women into the profession. And along the way, that meant that I started two social enterprises in that area. And I now have a business training leaders, particularly focused on women in STEM and minority groups in STEM. So passionate about business, engineering, also aviation. I'm learning to get my pilot's license. So I've got lots and lots of passions.
That's awesome. And I'm also a civil engineer, a civil environmental engineer. And I also, too, did not know what an engineer did when I even probably was, you know, well into the degree before I realized. But I did do a little bit of research and went, oh, yep, cool. I can travel with this. I can talk to people with this. I can make a difference in the world. But yes, I did the maths and science and all that type of stuff. But also kind of lent into the creative side of things as well. But that was always, I never saw it as like, I don't know, a part of my career or anything like that. It was always that's something you do for fun for a certain period of time. And then, yeah, you go into engineering, which is a really unfortunate, I guess, way to look at things. And I'm glad that I've snapped out of that. And, you know, one of the creative things is doing this podcast gives me that outlet, which I didn't realize the first time. At the time, you know, at the start when I was doing it. But I think it's really important, particularly in engineering, and which is why I asked you on the podcast, because I love your stuff. We seem to, I think we like are in each other's worlds, but we haven't actually been in the same place at the same time, as far as I'm aware. Maybe we have, and we just didn't meet.
Realize.
Anyway, enough about me. Let's go back to you. And how did you get into the space that you're in now?
Good question. I think it was sort of by accident. I think my passions kind of led me there. I think growing up, I wanted to be a leader eventually, and I thought it would be something that I would do when I had gray hair, I had wrinkles, I had a fancy title, I had decades of experience, and leadership would kind of be bestowed on me. But I think I just got really frustrated. My husband says that it's my inner anger, which I've now channeled for good, which is a good thing. And I think I just got a bit angry that there wasn't many women in the industry, that I just wasn't seeing change. I was reading so many reports on this is the stats, this is what we have to do, and just felt like nothing was being done. And I was sort of a bit like, stuff it. I felt like I bought an apartment, I finished my degree, I had a good job. I was like, all right, now to do something, like what else am I going to do with my life? I may as well go make a difference. And that really was the catalyst for me to start Power of Engineering, which is the first business I started, which is a not-for-profit. And we spoke to high school students. And again, I had no idea how to do that. STEM wasn't even a word, had no idea how to work in education, but I just wanted to go do something. And I think that's kind of the nature of engineers. We're problem solvers. We want to figure out how things work. And it wasn't kind of scary going, I'm going to go start a business. It was, I'm just going to go solve a problem and see if I can do it. And that kind of, led to where I am today.
Yeah, no, excellent. And I definitely relate to that kind of story. And it's like, okay, what am I going to do? And this, and particularly the leadership thing as well, like, really, yeah, that all of a sudden you just become a leader after a certain time period, but it doesn't happen. You have to make it. You have to make it, and you don't have to wait that long, right? You can start those things now, which is why I love what you do. So let's go to, actually, before we go further into Power of Engineering, let's go to smart communities. So tell us what a smart community is to you.
Ooh, such a broad topic. I think a smart community to me is one that is engaged and connected. And that could be through really basic technology. It can be through some fancy technology. As a civil engineer, I could totally nerd out about all the cool highway stuff. Recently, I was speaking with, say, Transurban, for example, and there's some super cool stuff and so much potential with what they can do with their transport network and how we can make cities better for people. And then all the way to, I've recently moved house and I have just been speaking with the local cafe owner who happens to live down the road, and we're making all these connections and lots of different ideas are coming up. So I see a smart community as someone that's like leveraging those social networks and leveraging that capability. But I think that really starts with connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think connection is such an important point. And I think for me, engineers have to be really key to that. And obviously we're biased, we're both engineers, but not just engineers, but all the other people coming into that conversation as well, which is why I love the space, because you get to meet so many new different people that think completely, differently to you. But I do think that the STEM has a really key component of it, because as much as it's not about, tech for tech's sake, but technology is here, right? So to improve the lives of people, we need to leverage the technology. We also need to be aware of the implications and all those type of things, which, as you said, you weren't scared to start a business because it was just solving a problem. It's similar in this space. It's like, oh yeah, we're solving problems. We're still solving problems, but we've got new tools and we've got new ways of doing things.
I think that's the key. I think often we think of technology as the answer. We're actually, you said it, it's the tool. It's that pathway to get there. And I think that's also true about everything in engineering. We often think of engineering as this thing, but I think it's the solution to get there. And when I speak to school students or when I speak to anyone who doesn't know what an engineer is, I always talk about the why of what we're doing, like why behind what we're doing, because that's a really important thing. And engineering and technology and STEM is just a pathway to get there. It's not the end outcome that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So how do you, you said you're very creative. How do you think that creativity and what you do now kind of links together? Has that, your creativity led you to what you're doing now?
Absolutely. Creativity, I think, is that flow genius zone kind of mode for me. And I, like yourself, didn't think engineers were very creative. I didn't think that fit into engineering. My perception of engineering was you've got to be this straight A student and you've got to sit down and do calculations all day. And I did do that when I first started as a structural engineer, but I definitely didn't get the right marks. I failed maths at uni. I failed other subjects at uni. And I suppose academically, I had to work really, really hard to be an engineer. And I did have this perception that a good engineer was someone who was amazing at the maths and sciences, got incredible marks. And I did see some of my peers at uni do that, and they were excelling at that. What I noticed about myself was I am someone who likes talking with people, likes working with people. I didn't feel like that kind of fit into the mold of an engineer, and creativity came along with that. And so I think we need people who think differently. We need creative people in engineering. We need all kinds of perspectives in engineering. It's really, really critical for us to be able to solve some of the really big challenges that we're working on. And I feel like everything I do is actually creative, and how I like to work as an engineer is really partner with people who do have those really amazing deep technical capabilities. And I sort of sit in that idea space or the strategic space and then work with people to deliver those outcomes together. So everything I do, I feel, is creative. And I think that is the whole thing that sits behind engineering. I know people talk about STEM versus STEAM. So the STEAM is adding in the arts, but I think it should just be STEM, because every part of STEM is creative anyway. It's kind of like a hidden or unseen characteristic of the profession.
Yes, I agree with you too. And I've had some chats with some other people, Michael Holstrom from STEMpunks, and we had a similar conversation. It's actually, well, the arts component of it is the result or the ingredients that you need anyway, so we don't necessarily need to separate it out. But it's only if we change the narrative of what, you know, it actually means, right? And I think that's a key point, not just engineering, but all those other, you know, science, math, technology. And I think how you spoke about being, you know, you're the creative and you do the ideas and then partnering with deep technical skills is so key and so relevant to the smart community space. Because I think you're right, when people think about, oh, well, an engineer must be ABCD, which is, you know, math, science, whatever, and sit there and do calculations. Not all engineers do that. And that's not all it is, and nor should it be. And also, just because you don't like that part of it. I didn't like structures at all, actually. And I was like, oh my God, what? I can't not like this part of it. Surely this is a big part of engineering. But then I realized I could choose other options, right? And I think that's really important. There are so many options that you can choose with engineering as a base that, yeah, it really opens up the world.
Absolutely. There's so much potential. And that's what's exciting, I think, about this profession. It's changing all the time. I graduated uni about 14 years ago. There's been so much change in that period of time. Even something simple like when I worked at Brisbane City Council, I had a UBD or RefIDEX in my car with me to find out where my projects were. Now, that just seems crazy that you got issued with a standard book. And that wasn't even that long ago. Now, of course, we all use our phone with Google Maps. And there has been such an amazing change in such a short period of time. And I think that's what's super exciting about our industry.
Yes, I also got thrown a RefIDEX, but I was like a deer and bandy, right? So it's just like, here's your Hilux keys. I hope you can drive a manual. And goodbye, keep driving that way until you can't go anymore. I'm like, oh, cool, okay, this will be fun. And I even think about like podcasts weren't a thing back then. I mean, I'm sure they were in some capacity, but what do I do? What do I listen to all day? I don't know how I survived. But anyway, going back to the power of engineering, your company, can you tell us a bit about what you do? So you talk to schools. What's kind of the objective of the business, I suppose?
Well, the key thing is really around shifting perceptions. So when it comes to attracting different people into engineering, there's so many different points along the pipeline that we could work. It starts off with the language that we tell young people, you know, boys or girls, and how we speak to young people, all the way through to their confidence about mathematics. Often those opinions can form in primary school. And then where we work is at the year 9 and 10 point. So we wanted to pick a point along the pipeline where we could make an impact. A lot of work at the time was being done on for year 11 and 12 students by universities, because of course they want them to go to their universities. But we see the year 9 and 10 part as a really interesting time for students because they are considering their senior subjects. So what we do is we run free one-day events for students to find out about engineering and shift that perception. So how we do that is they go through workshops, they do site tours, they get to see behind the scenes of engineering, and they hear from keynote speakers. So they're actually getting hands-on, they're making mistakes in the workshops, they're finding that things don't work, they're trying things out, and they're getting that personal experience for themselves around how they could be engineers. We show them lots of variety, and the behind-the-scenes stuff is super cool. Like, we've done the A380 hangar in Sydney at the Qantas hangar, and it's just so cool and so exciting. And we find that 77% of students who had not considered engineering before, who were a no to a career in engineering, actually changed their mind to a yes. So we're seeing just after one day, we can have that perception shift. And really, ultimately, we are just one piece in the pipeline. We need actually systemic change. We need lots of programs along the way to make that impact. So far, we've reached 10,000 students, which I think is a pretty awesome milestone in the last 3 years.
Yeah, and it's a huge impact. And I think sometimes we think it has to be super complex and I don't know, you have to write a formula for it. But yeah, the formula is pretty simple, but that doesn't mean, you know, it's easier to do. Like there's so many challenges because you actually have to take a lot of that action and you need people that believe in it enough to stick with it for 9 years and 6 months, for example, which is how long. I'm just looking at your LinkedIn.
It's a long time to be committed to something. And certainly didn't think when we did a one-off event and the government said, here's some money to do it. I thought, oh, okay, cool, we'll give it a go. But, you know, when we saw the result, the first event, we had 57% of students change their mind. We thought, oh my gosh, that is so exciting after one event. You know, we've got to do more. So I think, yeah, it was kind of like, I can't not do it kind of thing. I just was spurred into action from that exciting result. And yes, I didn't think it would be 10 years. It just seems so far in the future. I can't even imagine what I'm going to be doing in 10 years time from now.
Yeah, you're going to have a big party, I think.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. Now you said that you had another business, another startup. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. So I've got two more. So after doing Power of Engineering and seeing that kind of spark and that engagement, we thought, what more could we do to get the that excitement for engineering and shift those perceptions? One area for improvement is mathematics classrooms. And there's some crazy stats, like 40% of teachers in school are not trained in that discipline of teaching math. So they're not trained. It can be really tricky to get excited about something and have your students be confident in that area. So we wanted to address that challenge and bring the real world element of what we did, because that was the thing that really shifted the perceptions when kids got to see why they were learning maths and that real world element. So we created a maths resource called Maths in Real Life, and we mapped the maths curriculum. Never thought I'd write a maths textbook because I hated maths at school. And we mapped the curriculum to these real world examples. So at the moment, we've got a year 9 available. And yeah, it's being used in classrooms in Australia to show those real world examples for students.
So exciting. Well, that's where we differ. I love math, right? It was my favorite subject at school. You know, the advanced math was, you know, my favorite subject. I just loved it. But yeah, but that's the thing. I like math, but the real world element, I don't know. I know people would often ask, oh, how am I going to use this? But I just enjoyed it so much, I didn't even bother to ask that question. But not everyone's like me. Who would have thought? And so, yeah, that's really important. Okay, that's one, that's two. Now tell us about the third.
So the third one is my most newest venture, and I really am passionate about leadership. Like I said at the beginning, I didn't think I could be a leader till I was much older, and it's been really exciting to see how much change I could make by taking on my leadership. And like you said, it's not about a title. It's really about your behaviours, your attitude, and your mindset. And there's so much potential in our young people in Australia today. There's some pretty crazy stats around how they're underemployed, how it takes nearly 3 years for them to get a full-time job after graduating university. And there's so much potential for leadership. So me and my husband founded We Aspire Future Leaders. And the aim there is really to unlock the leadership of young people and accelerate their careers. I'm not sure if you had this when you were first graduated, but often you had your grad program, and then there's kind of a big gap between your grad program and that hopefully leadership opportunity. And I think we can lose a lot of people in that gap, and particularly people who are from diverse backgrounds. You know, if you're not getting the tap on the shoulder, or if you're not in the in-group at work and you are a bit different, which often happens, we need that diversity in leadership. We need that diversity making decisions about our cities and about the world around us. So we're passionate about helping those leaders unlock their leadership and get into the roles that they want to make a difference.
Yeah, excellent. Well, it sounds really exciting. And I think, you know, the combination of the three, and I'm sure you'll probably found some more companies sometime, maybe, you know, 10 years time. So you don't know what you're doing. Probably 3 or 4 on the ones there. I mean, I have some ideas, but actually this isn't about me. So I want to ask you, how do you think STEM fits into the smart community space?
I think it's essential. I think it's a critical part and a really foundational element. I think ultimately smart cities and smart communities is all around people. And I think STEM really has the power to say, I want to use the word unlock again and double up for what I was saying about what we're doing. But I think STEM is really that tool that can really unleash the power of cities and the power of community and the connection. I think it's a framework, it's a mindset to solve problems and a mindset to make the world a better place. There's some great research that was done by the Royal Academy of Engineers over in the UK. And they said engineers, their job is to make things work and make things work better. So I think that's a crucial element of smart cities, whether it comes, you know, challenges we're facing like loneliness with elderly people. That's a problem, that's a challenge. And an engineering framework and a STEM mindset helps us solve those challenges.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's the deep technical capability of engineers, and if they're then, you know, have a kind of foundational knowledge and then partner that with, you know, the tech side of things or data. So I think engineers are very used to using data, but we didn't really talk about it like data's spoken about now, right? I think, you know, data is like, you know, an asset or an insight. It was just a thing that you had to do to get your answer at the end of the day. So yeah, that's where I also agree. There's a real, yeah, and I like the word unlocking or unleashing that's possible when you have those foundational skill sets. And then you can actually work with other people as well. Now, I'm keen to hear your thoughts around, you know, we've got engineering, you've got leadership. How do these two things kind of fit together? And are there bits missing that you're trying to kind of piece together with what you're doing in your work?
Well, there's really interesting stats around engineers who go on to become leaders. In America, actually, in the S&P 500, there are more engineers than accountants or lawyers who are CEOs. And I find this quite fascinating of how many engineers actually go on to be in leadership roles. Then if we also look at the numbers of women in leadership, the numbers are quite poor. About 33% of middle managers are women. And also when the CEOs in Australia, I think it's about 3.3%. It's gone down. There are more Andrews, I think it was the previous year, there were more Peters than women in the ASX 200 CEO list. So I think if we can empower more women into engineering, then engineers are really amazingly placed to go be leaders in our communities and leaders of our businesses. So I think they go hand in hand from that perspective. And I think an engineering mindset really pairs nicely with leadership. I think leadership is really about people, and engineering at the end of the day is about people. We're designing things for people. So while it might not sound like a natural fit when you say engineering and leadership out loud, I think there are a lot of links. And I think an engineering brain paired with leadership, paired with a lot of that people understanding, has a really amazing potential to make a difference.
And I have been having some conversations recently about engineering and communication. And, you know, typically people don't think that engineers can communicate very well, which I think is an unfair thing to say. You know, there may be your, I guess, traditional views of engineering, but I think as time goes on, we need to be able to communicate, right? And I think, as you just said, engineers and leaderships go hand in hand, which I think then the communication side of things. Is there anything that you do, I guess, differently in this space where you think that's really kind of lifted that communication side of things? Or was it just a natural thing that came to you? Was it something that you just thought, oh, actually, this is really important if I want to get this message out there? It's not only the engineering, it's actually this communication skill set that I have.
Yeah, communication is such a huge part of it. And I didn't really think of it as a strength that I had in the beginning because I wanted to kind of be like everybody else and be good at maths and science. And it reminds me of back in one of my early jobs was at Brisbane City Council. And I realized a huge part of what we did was community consultation and working with the community. And I actually really loved that part of my role. I felt like it was a real challenge of how do I get this engineering concept and explain it to the everyday person? And people do say that a lot to me of, you're an engineer, but you can communicate. Like, that doesn't make sense. Engineers shouldn't be like that. And I do laugh, but I think it is very frustrating because if you have a really great idea, if you have this awesome invention as an engineer, it's not going to go anywhere if you can't actually communicate your idea, if you can't sell it, if you can't influence, and if you can't actually get the community on board. So it's almost like you may as well have not had the idea in the first place. So I think communication is critical and essential, and I feel grateful that it's a skill that I guess some ways naturally have, but also it's a very learned skill. I've never really thought of myself as a public speaker. And then when started my businesses, that kind of came to fruition. And through that practice of communicating with the community, I learned so much. And even in my early meetings at council, it's kind of embarrassing. I remember going to site one day with the communications person, and we were kind of practicing and role-playing what the meeting was going to be like as we were heading there. And so in my mind, I was like, they're going to care about the concrete strength. They're going to want to know about this bridge. They're going to want to know how amazing this is, how it's like a real missing link in the whole bikeway network. Like, this project's amazing. And the comms person turned around and said to me, no, they just care when their driveway is going to be closed and when they can't use it. And I thought, oh, that's so boring. This project's so much more amazing than their silly little driveway. But then I went, okay, I really get that perspective. And that was a real key moment for me and had me realize that when we're communicating, we're not communicating for ourselves, we're communicating for the other person. And it's happened time and time again, even explaining about power of engineering. I'd want to go in and pitch this idea about all this great stuff, but the company didn't care about what I had to say. They cared about it from their perspective. So I think it's actually been key to my success, is being able to communicate. And it's definitely an art and a skill, and it's something to be practiced.
Yes, I 100% agree. And I love that story. And I love what you just said there about it's actually not about what I want to tell you. It's about what they need at the time, what they care about. And if those things don't align, you can keep talking and talking and talking, but you've already lost them. And like you said, you might not, you're better off just not having the idea in the first place, or it's like that. So yeah, I think it's a really key skill. And I think for engineers, it's a really, really, really important one, like you said, because even if you don't want to have a podcast or you don't want to be a public speaker, you still have to be able to communicate your ideas, not even to the community, but just to, you know, people around you. We do things that are differently. We solve problems. So then you have to, and sometimes those things have never been done before, ever. So you have to really sell what your idea is. And sometimes it may not be super obvious in like, this is the outcome we're hoping for, but actually these are the risk levels and this is what might happen, blah, blah, blah. But we still think it's a really good idea because we've done ABCD. And if you can't do that, if you aren't able to really put that across, then yeah, it happens every day, I'm sure, every second of every day, that there's great ideas that are just sitting there on paper or in someone's computer or in someone's head because they aren't able to communicate. So I think it's a skill that needs to be developed when we go through uni, even before that, like you were saying, working with school children, et cetera. But it's not just like, oh, okay, well, you know, the oral presentation is not just in English. It can be in math, it can be in science, it can be all these things, and actually combine those things together is really, really, really key.
Definitely. I'm just nodding at everything you're saying.
If you're listening to the podcast, then you can't hear the nodding, but there's lots of nodding happening. We also have fabulous jackets on too. Anyway, enough about me again. I want to go back to you and I want to zoom a little bit further into the future. And can you tell us about the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough?
That is a really fantastic question. Well, I think the problems that we're solving are different from that they were, say, 20 years ago. And I think they're going to continue to evolve and be more complex and more complicated. So think back in the day as engineers, we used to solve problems of like, cool, the road's going here. It goes from A to B, pretty straightforward, you know, do some geotech, put some pavement down, a very classic engineering example, I know, and then away we go. Now they're a lot more complex and they're a lot more complicated. We need to be aware of the community. It was amazing to be at Brisbane City Council and they actually took on board what the community had to say. And I thought when I started there, it wouldn't be like that, that they would just sort of, it would be like an exercise as part of the process, but they really took it on. I was super impressed by that. And even more recently, working on the Westgate Tunnel project in Melbourne, there was a key part of, say, a noise wall that we were discussing in the office, and community was the number one thing when we were talking about this noise wall. And I think that's so brilliant to see that this is at the forefront of the conversation. Going ahead to the future, I think it would be cool if we were solving problems ahead of time. We've been talking about climate change for such a long time. As an example, food shortages, water shortages. Recently in Stanthorpe in Queensland, they ran out of water and they had to get trucks there. Like, these are problems that we can actually solve ahead of time. And I think what no one's talking about is what could we get ahead of? We have so much incredible knowledge as engineers, scientists, etc. How do we get ahead of those complex and complicated problems? Now, the challenge with those problems is we're now working in this massive system And once you start to affect one thing over here, it can have an unintended consequence somewhere else. And I think that's another piece we need to be mindful of when we're addressing these challenges, that we're not making other problems down the track. So I'd love us to be proactive in our problem solving.
Yes. And I think that is definitely an emerging trend. And even, you know, there's predictive analytics and those type of things, but then applying that then to some of the traditional problems that we have every day. I mean, even traditional problems, I don't really like to use that term, because for me, they're all one and the same, because they're all affected by technology. They're all, you know, our whole lives are kind of affected by this new way of life. So it's not like this versus that. They're all issues that we could solve with some different thinking, or maybe the same thinking but a different tool or a new approach, or just being able to think about those things ahead of time. And maybe that is because we now have data to tell us that something is going to break before it actually breaks, which even that is not super new, but can we apply this to different things, like talking about roads or pavements or even water supply and all those type of things as well? But then it's like, it's not just that we know, not that we've collected the data, then there needs to be a shift in how the decision can actually be executed. Because if we don't have that whole system, like you said, we just have lots and lots of information but no knowledge because we're not doing anything about it.
That's right. And I think that's where diversity comes in and why diversity is so important, and diversity in leadership and getting different perspectives in the room, because we're not going to be able to challenge the status quo if we don't have those different ideas. And it's not just about the diversity. Of course, it's around inclusion and equity and creating those spaces where people feel like they can challenge and where they can belong. So we need to have that as well. And I think that's essential for solving these big challenges.
I agree. Okay. Well, it's been so great to chat with you. I'm really excited to see where you go next. And it'd be really great to be in the same 3D room at some point. We'll have to sort that out. But I just have one last question, really, a fairly easy one, which is, how can people connect with you?
Very easy. I love LinkedIn. I'm obsessed with LinkedIn. Zoe, I think you've got a bit of that flavor as well. So reach out to me on LinkedIn, Felicity Fury. I'm pretty sure there's only one of me in the world, or you can go to felicityfury.com and find out about all my other projects and everything we mentioned today.
Excellent. And yes, we will have another convo. Yep, I feel like there's something bubbling behind that we both need to get involved in somehow. Okay, so we'll put the link in the show notes so people can click away and find you. Thank you again for coming onto the Smart Community Podcast, and I really look forward to our next conversation.
Sounds awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
We'll talk soon. Bye.
Bye.
Are you looking for an engaging speaker, MC, or facilitator for your next big event? Then we've got you covered. Zoe is a go-to speaker, MC, and conversation facilitator with a difference. She's a master at simplifying the complex and making connections you might never see. Book Zoe for your next event. Email hello@mysmart.community or head over to her speaker page, www.mysmart.community/speaking.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.